This is Spectrum.
Alternative medicine, homeopathy, secret society, hypnosis, the paranormal, alternative energy, UFO abduction, the weird, the wild, and the wonderful.
With your hosts, Tom Theophanis and Scott Jordan.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Spectrum Radio Network. I'm Scott Jordan, here with my co-host, Tom Theobanis, and remember, there's no such thing as too much information. Hey, Tom, how you doing this week?
I'm good. How you doing?
Aaron France is an author, filmmaker, and researcher best known for his 2008 documentary, The Age of Transitions. His works cover many topics, including technological singularity, transhumanism, public relations, propaganda, occult symbolism, esoteric religion, eugenics, geopolitics, and mind control. Aaron has appeared on many online radio programs, most notably the Swedish-based Red Ice Radio, that has featured him as a guest for three different separate occasions. His website is www.theageoftransitions.com. Welcome, Aaron.
Hi, Aaron. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Scott. Thanks for having me on. I'm very excited.
Yep. I'm looking forward to talking to you about, you've got a new book out called Revolve, and you also have a DVD out called The Age of Transitions. Brilliant book. I know the book has a subtitle, and I just can't remember it off the top of my head. You can help me out with that.
It's Revolve, Man's Scientific Rise to Godhood. That's the book. And yes, if you buy the paperback version of the book from theageoftransitions.com, you get a free DVD copy of The Age of Transitions, a video documentary that first put on the web. And yeah, that's a free gift when you buy the book Revolve.
Awesome. And the video itself got a lot of views on Google. I mean, what was that? It was 3 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, in 2008, I want to say I put it up in October. And shortly after I put it up, it started getting a lot of views. And it was, the hit counter was going pretty high. And it got up to 128,000 views, and it just stopped there and hasn't gone up ever since. Not on the Google counter, at least.
Oh, okay. So you topped out Google.
Yes, yes. That's the maximum allowed.
You did a mileage rollover on Google. Okay, let's talk about transhumanism. What exactly is transhumanism, and has that definition since it's first come out changed in any way?
Yes. Well, you're right. The definition of transhumanism has what the term transhumanism has meant is changed, at least publicly, to the public perception. The most recent version of transhumanism is advocating artificial intelligence, life extension, nanotechnology, cybernetics, things such as implants and other bodily augmentations to improve the human biology and become something more than human. Transhumanists, people who subscribe to the idea of transhumanism, their idea is to create a post-human. That's their ultimate ideal. So that's what the most modern and current version of transhumanism is. Before that, you had Julian Huxley in the 1950s. He wrote a book or an essay. I can't remember exactly which, but it was called New Bottles for New Wine.
Okay.
Yeah, New Bottles for New Wine. So in that, he coined the term transhumanism and basically put it in its modern sense, where he said something like man remaining man, but using his scientific know-how to transcend his limits, basically, and become something better.
Now, was he talking about the augmentation with technology and machinery and sort of that sort of thing, or was he just saying man's scientific reach and that sort of thing?
Yeah, yeah, he's being more general, and he wasn't describing AI or anything like this, like the present-day transhumanists were, but he was a well-known advocate of eugenics, and he was also big in UNESCO, the founding of UNESCO.
Oh, yeah.
First director general, and his he's big on this whole sort of world revolutionary campaign to really revolutionize education, for one thing, to get people in line with eugenic philosophy, because he saw that as the real way to, again, bring about the controlled and speedy evolution of the human genotype, actually create a better race through scientific know-how, that eugenics was the way to do that, and transhumanism is the modern version of eugenics too.
Okay, so from their point of view, they could just say, well, we want the best of the best of the human condition. And my sort of problem with that is, who defines that?
Yeah, that's an excellent question.
Who's the one who says, is it the scientists, the top end of the scientists who determine what's the best of the best, the guys that are really good at making atom bombs? And
Well, that's funny you should say the atom bomb, because Charles Galden Darwin was a very prominent eugenicist. He wrote that book, The Next Million Years, but he was also involved in the Manhattan Project. He was involved with making the atom bomb. So that's an interesting, you made the connection there. So he was sort of involved in both projects. Very wow. Important in both of those, yeah.
Okay. So do you have any questions, Tom?
Well, maybe you can give us a little bit on the technological singularity and how that fits in.
Oh. Yes, the technological singularity. This is the event that the transhumanists like to speak about so often. It's the idea of creating an artificial intelligence machine that becomes artificially general and generally intelligent, an AGI, what they call it, which just means it has cognitive capacity similar to a human. You know, it has problem-solving ability. It can, like, learn so that, and grow. And
so that's different than just artificial intelligence.
Yeah. Because
so artificial general intelligence would be the kid in the movie AI.
He's a general intelligence.
He would be general intelligence, right?
Yeah, he's an AGI, not just an AI. So that movie had an improper title. It should have been AGI, not AI.
Yeah.
You want to be technical.
they probably dumbed it down for the humans.
Sure.
So that they'd be able to get it. So, and so they're waiting for what?
The creators of AI?
Yeah. They're going somewhere. Where do they want to get to?
Yes. As I was saying, the idea of the singularity is an AGI that becomes so intelligent that it reaches the level of human, then it goes beyond that, it starts self-improving, and it gets to be unfathomably intelligent. It starts creating all sorts of inventions, and progress just speeds up exponentially, the exponential curve we hear so much about. And then at that point, humanity is faced with a problem because AGI is now in control of the world because it's the superior intellect, you know, it's so much smarter and so much more powerful than us. So naturally, it would be in control. So the issue arises, well, what do humans do? And transhumanists like to use the term existential risk a lot. And they say that AGI would be an existential risk because it, you know, it threatens humanity. Like, oh, no, what do we do? AGI is too smart. What do we do?
And what's the answer?
Yeah, of course. There's your problem. You got to have the solution to go along with it. The solution is to take upgrades, the transhuman upgrades. You put the artificial intelligence into humans. So you actually implant AI into your brain with the brain chips and this. You let AI enhance humanity, and this is always part of the transhuman sale pitch. You'll always see this. They say AI is going to get so intelligent, and the only way to keep up is for you to become a transhuman cyborg. Otherwise, you're going to be left behind, and you're just not going to make it. So they turn it into a survival situation.
Now, having said all that, is it practical to think that they can actually achieve this sort of thing? And the reason I ask this is because Tom mentioned something to me earlier today when we were talking about this subject. We were bouncing it back and forth. Tom said, okay, I get that, but how are you going to do that to people in other parts of the world that, you know, live in, you know, that are running around the desert and, you know, living sort of a nomadic life, and people in other countries that are living more of a life closer to the land? How is that going to be integrated into their life, or will it be?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's...
Because they're talking about it as if it's a worldwide phenomenon. And there's whole groups of people that they're just not going to be able to target, or will they?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and then they've got their idea of, you know, we'll send out the nanobots, you know, they'll just send out clouds of nanobots that are going to go into people's bloodstreams and go into their brains and all this. But I mean, with all that stuff, you have to question it, like you're saying, because like it gets very science fiction-y really quick. And you have to wonder, like, okay, well, how much of this stuff is just like sensationalist science fiction-y stuff just to get people excited about the idea, for one thing? How much of it is that, and how much of it is really practically achievable in the short term, and where is it actually going? And, you know, I mean, even with the idea of an AGI, I kind of see this, like, sometimes I wonder, like, well, the idea of an AGI, is that kind of like a distraction just so that we can, like, sit here and speculate and, like, oh, an AGI, that'd be amazing. Meanwhile, they're developing all these narrow AI systems to go over massive amounts of data sets that are collected everywhere now. I mean, all of our online activity, anything digital activity, it's database somewhere, more than likely. Right. And they've got an AI analyzing it. And this is coming out in news stories everywhere. You see, I just saw one recently. It says AI, like, going through, like, Facebook or something and, like, trying to figure out patterns. It's all about, like, pattern recognition. And
isn't that the one that's reviewing movies? It'll review the movie, and then it'll spider. The spiders are more like tarantulas, but
actually, they were talking about that on CBC this morning. They were talking about the, you know, they can do that with movies and with music and all kinds of stuff like that. But these are just apps right now, and I mean, it seems fancy, but I don't think it's any different than most of the other applications that they're putting on.
Well, it's certainly different than what they were doing 20 years ago.
Yeah,
it may not seem fancy today. Okay, but 20 years ago, that would have seemed pretty fucking fancy.
Excuse me, 20 years ago, you were using one of those chunky calculators in your pocket.
That's true. Well, weren't you saying something about you seen a show? Was it I Dream a Genie?
Bewitched, actually.
Bewitched, yeah. And what was the story there?
Well, there was
there's a calculator, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were using a calculator, but it was about probably about 3 feet by 3 feet size almost.
Now you can get them on the end of a postage stamp, so the size of a postage stamp or something. You know, we have them in our phones.
Yep.
You know, this sort of stuff is... Now, this is interesting. TV series and movies have been sort of implanting this, and I'll get to eugenics later because that's something I want to talk about as well, because there is a connection between eugenics and transhumanism.
Yeah.
But TV series for decades have been sort of inserting transhumanism ideas. If you just like jump in the Wayback Machine, we could talk about the $6 million man.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, you know, better than he was before, faster, stronger. I mean, what they're saying is human plus or human 2.0.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the name that they go with, too. It's the World Transhumanist Association. That was their original group. Now they're called H+, which stands for Humanity Plus. So with that name, I can't help but think about like 1984, like double plus good, and like, you know, humanity plus. You know,
yeah.
I mean, like, what the heck does that even mean?
It means like, better than.
Yeah. That's
be better than you. So, yeah. But nowadays, you've got shows like Fringe, Sanctuary, Warehouse 13, Heroes 4400. I could go on and on. Yeah. Now, Warehouse 13 is going a little, adding sort of like a mystical or magical component, which is prevalent as well. Because the sort of the way I think these people think of things is alchemically, magically. They think about it as, well, they use terms like interacting with computers telepathically or interacting with other people telepathically. But it's techno-telepathy.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, the techno-telepathy, this is a subject that I've been very interested in lately and speaking about lately. And actually, this fits into the Georgia Guidestones, which seemed like a totally off-topic, but it fits in.
Okay, you're going to have to explain that one.
Yeah, it deserves explanation, but I promise you there is a connection, yeah. And of course, the Georgia Guidestones is basically the list of 10 rules for the New Age of Reason. And the third one, I believe it's the third principle, is create a living new language. Living new language. So they're talking about a language that's alive, whatever that means. So that's a little mysterious to begin with. There's mystery to decode in that, just that third principle. And the Georgia Guidestones, the actual company in Georgia called the Elbert and Granite Company, they published this little booklet in 1980 after they erected the Guidestones, and they went into great detail. It's really good, really good publication. I actually have the PDF available at theageoftransitions.com in the link section if anybody wants to go and read this. But anyway, the sponsors of the Georgia Guidestones, those mysterious guys that nobody knows who they are, they basically like wrote a letter saying, you know, why they wanted the stones built and all this. And they get into detail about that, the living new language. They address that. They're like, okay, the living new language. And they say specifically in there that it needs to be a way of communication that links men and machines.
So really?
They specifically say a language that unites men and machines in this book from the sponsors of the Georgia Guidestones. So I found that very telling, because beforehand, before I even read that, I was like, a living new language. I mean, I had a feeling that they were kind of getting at that, because I heard Kevin Warwick, the big transhumanist mouthpiece, although he's not an official transhumanist, he's not part of their association or whatever, you know what I mean? It's the same ideas. Kevin Warwick, he's the Mr. Brain Implant, Mr. Cybernetics guy. But yeah, he's always talking about, oh, we need synthetic telepathy. You know, human speech is just so terrible and you can't get your ideas across. It'd be so great if we had synthetic telepathy, and these brain implants are going to be how we're going to do it. Okay. And then you get this living language business, bridging communication between men and machines.
Wow.
It's all connected.
Now apparently the person who went in, and there was a whole group of people, but it was R.C. Christian.
Yeah.
But behind that was like a whole group of people that were involved. You just tracking them down, it was a little difficult, because I don't think anybody's done it, really, to be honest.
Yeah, well, the only person who knew who this R.C. Christian man actually was, and he admitted that that was his fake name.
Yeah.
The only person who knew who he was the banker in the Elberton, Georgia town, because he had to go through his financial records and check everything. And he, again, in the book, R.C. Christian swears the banker to secrecy, to an oath of secrecy. So he makes him take an oath, and then the banker rigorously hides the identity of R.C. Christian. He tears up letters and all this, and he never reveals it. And, you know, they play to the mystery, too. Like, oh, yeah,
right.
This one guy knows who it is, but nobody else does. And, like, it's just a mystery for people to figure out, so it gets people intrigued about.
But it's really not much of a mystery if it's just his buddy said, hey, dude, here's what we're going to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This will fuck him up for years.
Yeah, they don't want you to know that. That's how it works. But they want to create mystique, because when you create mystique, people need to understand.
But the Georgia Guidestones, they're a real thing, and I mean they lay out a whole purpose. But now that surprises me. I did not know that, because supposedly we're supposed to keep the population to 500 million.
Yes.
Whether this is after some sort of, I mean, we're at 6.5 now. We get a long way to go to get it to 500 million. I mean, that's going to be a lot of work. Yes, even for the Third World War or some other ridiculous thing that would have to happen. What do they know that we don't?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that the 500...
I mean, come on, pick a realistic number.
Yeah, I know. They couldn't have said like 1 billion. Like that would have made it been like, oh, okay, I could see that. You know?
We don't have to kill what 5.4 billion.
Yeah, 500 million. It's staggering that they chisel these ideas into stone.
It blows my mind that it just doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, either they know something that we don't know.
Yeah.
That some event is going to happen to wipe out 6.2 billion people.
Yeah. Or some process is going to be enacted to eventually work that into the age of reason so that we get there finally.
Yeah, that's like their hope number. They hope they can get to that point, right?
Gee, what process could bring us to that sort of conclusion? Could it be eugenics again? Could that work?
Okay, so
there's
my lead-in. There's my lead-in. Thank you. That was great. It was almost like you timed it. Transhumanism is connected to eugenics in the way that what? That transhumanism is the new face of eugenics because the word eugenics has become sort of over the years become not very popular.
Yeah, sure. Well, you got to break down the word. Eugenics is... good genesis, basically, good genes. So it's about good genes and good genetics. And it's about, with transhumanism, you get the genetics and biotechnology to improve the human species from the genetic level up. And fundamentally, this is, as I said, it's about not letting the natural process of evolution take place over however long it takes and however mysteriously it works. We don't even really know that for sure, although it doesn't stop people from pretending they know. Instead of letting nature take its course, we need to take evolution into our own hands and do it really quick, do it really fast so we get to the we win the race. We need to get to that end goal, and the end goal is a higher form of consciousness, a better vessel to incarnate the human spirit into, improve the human body, and eventually become a god and live forever. That's the end goal.
Where originally eugenics had some pretty racial problems. It had problems with race. It had problems with the original eugenics. Some of the programs were done through Africa, where they were making the female population over there sterile. There was a whole, that was all part of the eugenics, what sort of went into giving eugenics that bad name that we were just talking about.
Yeah, had to go underground. Crypto eugenics, that was their official line in the 60s. They had meetings about this and they talked about it. They're like, oh, we need to have a crypto eugenics campaign and then find other ways to package our ideas. We don't have to completely shelve them. We just have to think of better ways.
Get Planned Parenthood or something.
Get the marketing guys in here. That's all you need to do.
Yeah, they did sort of change the face of eugenics. You don't really hear eugenics talked about now. It's become politically incorrect to talk about. Yes. In general, I think, would you agree with that?
Yeah, it's even a taboo. Like, you're not even supposed to talk about it. Like, it never happened or something.
Yeah, like the history of eugenics never actually occurred.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe these things are happening when they tried to do that, a couple of years ago when they made us take all the shots for the H1N1 flu there.
Yeah, the H1N1.
Yeah, well, I mean, funny, we just spoke with... Mary Toko about vaccines and you know, why not use more than one? Because vaccines can be targeted.
Yeah, that's right. To specific genotypes, that there have been quite a few comments that have come out in public about the race-specific bioweapons and all that too, and that's pretty well known now. I know.
Go ahead, Tom.
For them to be able to take out, that kind of a population, it would have to be something immense. And I think if this thing a couple of years ago was more like a test to see how people would react, and they probably realized that it's not going to work, at least not in that number.
Yeah, and they also just want to scare people, too, because we're living through this time of troubles. They want this to be a time of troubles, to break everybody down, to break their spirit, mainly. That's we always have to remember that, too. They're trying to scare us.
And how much of that is manufactured? You know, would it be a time of trouble if we didn't keep shoving money in the bankers' pockets, bailing them out? Really?
Exactly. Yeah. And with the whole banking system, I don't know about you, but it appears to me that from its very inception, it was set up so that it could possibly collapse. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it seemed like it was almost set up to fail. Like, you know, with the massive debt that it creates just inherently, by the way, it was set up to begin with. So you have to take that into account and just really wonder, like, all these massive crises, how they're all happening at once. We got the economic deal. We've got terrorism. Ooh, that's all around us, so scary. You got to keep us safe from that.
Yep.
And then you've got the global warming and the climate change alarmism scaring the heck out of people, and also demonizing human beings at the same time. So we've got this, from all angles, we're being hit with, like, with this fear propaganda. And
but you know what, though? All this propaganda type stuff that's going on is happening down here in North America. It's not necessarily happening in countries that, you know, are supposedly causing that type of fear to be created.
Yeah.
Well, there's quite a bit happening. I mean, just as an example, Tom, Greece is pretty much bankrupt. They're not having a grand old time out there, and there's no barn dances happening, you know.
No. But I'm saying, like, from the point of view that Aaron was mentioning, that you know, all the scare tactics that are going on are happening more or less up here.
Yeah, absolutely.
The terrorism situation, you know, is not. I mean, even though it was in the West, but I don't think, you know, it took the type of approach that it happened in the U.S. and in Canada. To a certain degree, in the European countries. I mean, I know for a fact Greece and, you know, most of the Yugoslavian states and, you know, in those areas where a lot of folks from, you know, from Muslim countries are coming in right now, they didn't have that same problem that we have here. Or at least the problem that we have here is more like a perceived problem.
I would say different problems.
Yeah, they try to perceive it that way, but it's not a real problem. It never was.
No, absolutely. That's a point. They're trying to just scare us into compliance, basically, because America is still the vehicle to go and unify all those countries you're talking about that that are a problem for that's all these countries we're invading, you know, they're still a problem, and we need to bring them democracy and get them up to standards.
It ain't going
to
change nothing, because democracy is not what it's about over there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, that's the whole deal.
Religion plays a bigger part over there, not democracy. And
yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, it's all ridiculous. They're trying to scare us, that's for sure, no doubt.
Well, I mean, the scare tactics is for control, and you know, that's there's no doubt on that part, and it makes sense from a political point of view. You know, if I can, you know, if financially things are not going so well, you know, then we have to create a different enemy or something to take your attention away from that, you know, so you can still have the control factor and you know.
Nope.
Keep you in mind.
Yeah, and there's no security either, because when you don't have, when your bank account freezes or whatever, you don't have any money, or the money's not worth anything anymore, what do? Like, you're totally helpless, and it's a tough situation. I mean, because to the extent that this is all controlled, I mean, where does that leave us? You know what I mean? Like, where do we fit in the middle of all this? And we're dependent, and that's not a good thing. And there's almost they want us backed up in a corner, so that specifically we'll act out in revolutionary ways and actually carry out violence and chaos and create a time of troubles. And I'm saying you can actually elicit chaos and confusion with a purpose to just bring down the entire old world. And I feel like that's what's happening right now, that the entire, all the old social systems, economic, political, and religious systems, they're all being torn down now for a purpose, because they're making way for a new one. And if you can incite chaos and confusion, that'll tear down the old system for you, to burn it right down. That's all part of the alchemical process.
I was actually going to say that this sounds like an alchemical process, that these loops happen. You have to go through certain stages. Maybe what are they trying to emulate that? Is that what you're saying? Natural outgrowth?
I think it's a little bit of both, actually. I think that they use timetables and this obsession over the zodiacs and all this and the symbolism. That's their timetable. The zodiac is just a giant timepiece when it comes down to it. And the alchemy is about it's almost a scientific process. Like, first you do this, then you do that. So you take the experiment through in stages, and to get to your where you want to go, you have to follow a certain set of directions. And that's what it's all about. And dissolution is is what I'm talking about now. You have to dissolve the old so that you can create the new. The Solvay Coagula idea of alchemy, turning the lead into gold, the old lead being the less than perfect system, the gold being the golden new system, the golden new man, and all this.
Mm. So... Go ahead, Tom.
Sorry, Scott. Going back to the Georgia Guidestones, wasn't they always said that? I mean, that there was a connection to the Rosicrucians,
or yes,
some Rosicrucian connection.
Yes, yeah. With the name R.C. Christian, that's referring to Christian Rosencruz, basically.
They also said that Turner was the one that probably put them there, no?
Oh, Ted Turner? Well, he certainly would agree with them based on his public statements. I mean, you could also say it was Maurice Strong. You could say it was Mikhail Gorbachev. You could say it's any Al Gore. You could say it's any of those guys, because even if R.C. Christian, it's not one of those guys, it's a man with the very same ideology. And it's unique with Maurice Strong and Mikhail Gorbachev specifically. The Earth Charter was all... also a set of 10 rules, and the Georgia Guidestones happens to be a set of 10 rules. And Maurice Strong and Mikhail Gorbachev both said that they wanted the Earth Charter to be like the 10 commandments for this new age. And what do you have? The Georgia Guidestones are actually, they are the 10 commandments for the new age, and it's actually saying the same things as the Earth Charter. It's the same principles, and it's actually written in stone like the 10 commandments were. So you see these parallels all over. So, I mean, who is R.C. Christian? Like, trying to interpret the mystery, a person's going to want to, like, point their finger at an individual. Like, R.C. Christian is this guy, he's that guy, when it's more appropriate to interpret him as...
a philosophy.
As a philosophy. And that's what these groups, that's what these secret societies do. They use ideas, and then they don't come out publicly because they use the ideas to further their great work. That's what they do, because it's all about putting the ideas out in the consciousness, and that's how you actually affect change in the real world. That's what the alchemical process is about, is using the power of mind, the power of ideas to shape the material world, shape matter.
But the funny thing is, though, the Rosicrucians right now, at this particular time period, don't seem to be, at least on the scale, you know, of what they used to be in the past.
And with like membership.
The Masons are more prevalent now than, you know.
Yeah, the it's interesting, again, with the Masons and the Rosicrucians and the Georgia Guidestones. In that Georgia Guidestones book, in the back of the book, it lists a lot of the guys involved in the project from the Granite Company, and they go out of their way to list their Masonic affiliations. A bunch of them are 32nd degree.
Really?
A bunch of them are 32nd degree. The president of the Elbert and Grant Company, he's a 32nd degree Mason. A couple of the other guys, the Master Stones craftsmen who actually sculpted the stones, they were 32nd degrees too. There's a Master Mason in there who also etched some of the writing into the stone. And they go out of their way to point this out in the back of the book. And they also make a point to let you know how many children each of the prominent people involved in the project have. And if you notice, most of them have two children or less. So they're telling you that...
This is our philosophy.
Yeah, they're saying, like, hey, look, we didn't just, like, cut this into stone and, like, we don't believe in it. This is our religion here, you know? This is... We adhere to this, and we want everybody else to as well, you know? I mean, we're not just hypocrites, you know? Like, we stand by the principles in these stones, you know what I mean? So they're pretty serious about it.
Are there fundamentalist transhumanisms? Transhuman people?
Oh my, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, actually, that's a term I love to use, is transhuman fundamentalists. They're the people who view transhumanism, and for them, it's a religion. And the whole transhumanist line becomes dogma for them. And, you know, they're just like any other fundamentalist thinker. You can't argue with them. Like, this is their way to achieve immortality, and it's the best thing that ever happened, and you can't argue against it, and if you do, you're a terrible person.
How can you argue with living forever?
Yeah, exactly. You can't argue.
Who doesn't
against...
want that? Well, maybe me.
Me.
Yeah, exactly.
It's too long. Forever is a big... Long. Too long, man.
Yeah. And you know what? Here's the deal. I want to know, do I have to live forever... in the situation I'm in now, like, you know, it's
you
like
don't want to go past a couple of years with that one.
Yeah, you know, I've got $8 billion in the bank, living forever might be kind of cool, you know. But
yeah.
I'm working week to week, you know. Fuck that.
Well, don't worry, the machines will do all the hard labor at that point.
Right, that's how they would sell it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just, some of it seems unrealistic, and it seems a little bit like a fairy tale. Like, we're being told the epic story from Star Wars, but only in our lifetimes.
Yeah, well, I would agree with that. Yeah, and they definitely use sensationalist claims, and they exaggerate here and there. And as I said, even with the AI problem, like, it may be that they don't even create an AGI, but they sure as heck have created general AI systems to sift through all the data that's been collected on us, and no one's been the wiser. So it's mining patterns, and it's creating social simulations, virtual simulations of the real world, making copies of real people. And
yeah. Well, we're sorry, but we got to take a quick break right now, and we'll see you guys on the other side.
If you suffer or know someone that suffers from back pain, knee pain, or any other chronic or sports-related pains, you need to visit LapingoProducts.com. Dealing with pain can affect every aspect of your life, which is why our products are designed to bring you real relief. Our products are not only easy to use, effective, and safe for the entire family, but our prices are competitive and offer a complete satisfaction guarantee. Visit LapingoProducts.com, real life solutions for pain-free living.
Hello, this is Scott Jordan, and I would personally like to thank all of our listeners for their emails of encouragement. It means a great deal to us. All of Spectrum shows are available in two formats, an MP3 stream you can listen to on our site, as well as a YouTube version. All of Spectrum shows are full length and free to listen to, and if I have my way, always will be. Tom and myself do all this work out of pocket, and freely give our time and effort to giving you, the listener, the best, most informative experience possible. I would also like to thank our listeners who have donated in the past to help with our expenses. Every donation goes directly to keeping the project alive. Thank you, enjoy, and keep listening.
AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com is your gateway to over 500 products, ranging from herbs to pain relief products, health, and well-being. AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com is dedicated to educating and empowering you to make the best possible informed decisions about what products you can use to improve your health and well-being. Visit AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com and bring about change in your life.
There's a couple of points I want to get to, but have you studied the nanotechnology? And is nanotechnology connected into this in any way?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the big major technologies that transhumanists advocate. And actually, personally, I haven't looked into nanotechnology specifically, like research papers and stuff. I haven't read a lot of that type of things. But I have read, you know, this basic things like the vision, the visionary papers that they write. This is what we want to do. So they'll say a lot of that. I know it's a high budget project that the military has been for decades.
Yeah,
I know
they put a lot of money into it.
Oh yeah.
And just so people know, I actually had someone say to me once, "There's no such thing as nanotechnology. We can't do any work at the nano scale." Therefore, if we can't do any work, there's no such thing as nanotechnology. Well, if you own a laptop, there are parts in that laptop that are built at the nanoscale, and the nanoscale is 10 atoms wide, right? So if you get there, there's parts in your laptop that had to be manipulated. So if something at the nanoscale is manipulated, therefore, it's nanotechnology. And it's not just machines. There's bio-nanotechnology. There's all kinds of these levels. And it would be a big deal for people who want to get into this sort of area of transhumanism and make humans better. I mean, Michio Kaku talks about injecting nanobots into your body and having them go all over the place and fix all the problems. You don't have to worry about it, right?
Yeah, they'd be like a synthetic immune system, basically, like a hyper immune system. It goes in and attacks the diseases. And that's the idea, to really apply nanotech and these things to the medical industry and revolutionize that. And I think that's probably where we're going to start seeing nanotech, who knows when in the future, but that's definitely one of the big goals is to...
You'll probably see it in the medical field before you'll see a transformer car.
Yeah.
A car that turns into a truck. You'll more than likely see it on the nanoscale in biology and the medical services where they can use it. I don't know what they do, enhancements and all kinds of things. Like they said, I think there was something to do with the correcting nerve damage and all kinds of stuff that they can do with that. I mean, that's a huge area. I know billions and billions of dollars are being put into that research and has been for a long time. If you think billions and billions of dollars are being put into the research and they're not going anywhere with it, I got some land to sell you.
Yeah, for sure.
And it'll be cheap. So where else can we go with transhumanism? Transhumanism, maybe where we should go with that is where do we realistically think this is going, and does it really need to go anywhere? Is it our choice, or is the choice beyond ours, beyond us?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. It is our choice. It's everybody's choice to make, and that's the importance of the media in all this, getting people, influencing people's minds to think that this is all just a natural process and, oh, look, it happened in the movie, so let's make it happen in real life. That's really the point of all that when it comes down to it. And, throughout this whole process, whatever happens, we have to remain critical. We have to be very critical. We can't let our guard down. We can't let our survival instinct go away because... the natural reaction to hearing about all these invasive technologies is one of concern. And no matter who it is, somebody's going to be like, oof, sounds like trouble to me. I don't know about that. And that's the initial reaction. But then over time, if you keep saying the same thing, like, oh, look, the technology has advanced further. And look, oh, this is progress. And you can't stop it. And like, why would you? It's doing all these good things. People start saying, oh, you know, it's not so bad, you know. And eventually you get to the point where you're putting a chip in your head, you know what I mean? And you don't even know, you don't really know who made the chip. You don't know what it does. You don't know how it works, that's for sure. But you're being told it's going to make you a whole lot smarter and a whole lot better. So you just go, oh, okay, let's put it in there, you know?
Yeah, you're getting all Johnny Mnemonic on it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, people then tend to acclimatize to things eventually. Like TSA scanners, you go stand in an airport now and just count all the people going through the TSA scanners. They're happily skipping and bouncing. You might see a couple of people with grumpy looks on their face. You might see one or two people stand back and go, you want to pat me down, you just pat me down. I'm not going to that machine. But you know what? That's okay. As long as 98% of them are doing it, no biggie.
Yeah.
And maybe that's where the revolution part of what you talk about comes in.
You mean actually angering that 98% of people? So they start,
I mean, I guess what you're talking about is we can either, A, go along with this eventual thing that may happen. We're not even sure it will. But this transhumanism movement, mostly fantasy in their heads, but there is some reality in the world that we have to live in.
Yeah, I agree.
Or there can be the revolutionary path. What's your opinion on that?
Well, again, I would say you have to be cautionary with revolution as well, because as I was saying, that revolution is being incited specifically to cause chaos as well, and we have to remember that. And they write reports about this too. There's that Strat Trends report that came out in 2006 from the MOD, where they say in the future, average people who did not used to hold any political views, like not really even care, used to be ambivalent and apathetic, that they'll suddenly become politically revolutionary and act out in violent ways. Well, you know what will happen when that occurs is you'll be called a terrorist, and then the military will be brought in, and then there will be the precedent set for the government to be roaming the streets with armed force, because everybody's just lost and gone crazy, and people are just killing each other, basically. And they write reports where they plan on this happening. They're like, oh yeah, it's going to happen. And we have to wonder, like, when that happens, like, is this all part of a process? Did this just happen out of nowhere? Like, how'd all these various crises, like the economic crisis and all the rest, how they just all happen all at once, and now we find ourselves hopeless and without anywhere to turn to, and now there's no safety and security anymore, but there's plenty of people promising us safety and security, because the safety and security thing, even beyond terrorism and all that, and the government stepping in to promise safety and security in that, also with a lot of the transhuman technologies and all these, they're always pitched as a way to give you safety and security. And also even with some of the sustainable development stuff, even is this too, it's all about creating a safe and secure world and just an atmosphere where people are genuinely freaked out, and they go searching for safety and security from an authority figure. And what will that authority figure be? And how do we end up in that position to begin with? I think that's something that we would all do well to understand, and understand now that that's a possibility. You know what I mean? That we actually are living in a chaotic time, in that we don't have any real we don't have any morals, for one thing. We don't have any moral standing. We don't have any real strong held beliefs. We're all just kind of what's truth, and what's everything's ambiguous. You know what I mean? That everybody nobody can agree with each other, and you know, there's no point to anything.
A lot of desensitization.
Yeah, a lot of just like kind of just kicking humanity around, and just turning them into like a nihilistic pile.
Apathetic.
Apathetic, atheistic. Just we don't believe in anything anymore. And when you're in that state, it's like, people don't understand that that's a weakened state for the human spirit to be in, actually, to be that broken down. And that's, I have to say, that's where we're at now. And I think we'd all do well to address that and be like, hey, look, you know, I'm going to take things back for myself. I'm going to believe in something. I'm going to start by believing in myself and say, hey, look, you know, whatever this crazy stuff is, I can handle it. I can play my part, and I can be a man. I can be a woman. I can step up to play, and I don't have to let all this scare me. I'm gonna live up to this occasion, and this is a crazy time in history. It's pretty exciting, actually. It's an exciting thing to actually be here, be alive, and try to find meaning in actually being present here. I think that's what everybody needs to do, because there's plenty of meaning to find, I feel.
So everything on these, I'm sorry, I just had a thought in my head. Everything in these is sort of coming for the better human. It's always, you got to be a better human. It's got to, you got to be an enhanced human. You got to be, yes. You got to be a fifth dimensional being. You got to be an 11th yes. dimensional being. So the New Agers are coming at their own sort of transhumanism when saying 2012, yes. the Earth is going to go into a 5D Earth. It's going to be amazing. We're all going to turn into angels. We're going to yeah. fly around. I'm being silly, but
well, they're being silly.
But you know, you either are going one way. We are going into the transhumanist. We're all going to turn into half machine, half human, and be gods, or you're going to turn into a god in a spiritual sense, where you turn into a fifth dimensional being. And the people, oh, yes, and this is the new devil, because the new devil is the people that aren't up to snuff, they get to say on another version of Earth that isn't 5D. Right? They get to say on the lower vibration of Earth,
yes,
where
exactly.
we, the worthy ones, ascend to yes. a new, oh, I mean, you know, just,
yeah, but, yeah well,
you know,
that's transhumanism on a spiritual level.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, one thing that can throw a monkey wrench into all this stuff, as technology grows, right? Right now, at the speed that we're going and how computers are, you know, progressing, we might be able to make contact with another species. If that happens,
yeah,
how is that going to change all this?
Making contact with something outside of ourselves.
Another species in the universe?
Yes.
That's actually an interesting and worthy topic, because if you study the writings...
More options for dates.
Yeah.
Possibly. Yeah. Or lunch.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely out there, but I would say that a lot of the AI guys especially are real out there with this kind of stuff too. A lot of transhumanists, they write papers about aliens, and they write about like all this crazy, like getting in touch with other weird dimensions, and you know, what is intelligence, and you know, how do we incarnate a better form, how do we reach higher levels of it, and like what does that even mean, and they get into all that wacky stuff. And
regardless of what you know, the first contact may end up being, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's a super intelligent being or, you know, someone less than us or somewhere near us, it will change the thinking of all this.
Of a human perspective, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what it's all about, is changing the mindset.
Yeah, well, you have religious people jumping off of bridges. Yeah,
yeah. And that's
well,
all part
yes,
of...
Yes and no, to a certain degree, but
yeah.
the one thing that with transhumanism right now is that, you know, they have these ideas, right, or more like fantasies, but
yes,
if something like that were to take place, and it most likely, I think it will happen sooner than later, right, then it will change the whole concept of all these things, because now you'll have another, I mean, so suppose we have not just contact, like to say hello from a distance, but they actually, you know, correspond with us somewhere here. That will change things completely.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and what would an AGI, if it has consciousness, and you get into that whole strange question, like...
That's debatable.
Sort of, yeah, exactly. What would that even be? Like, you could say that it'd be an alien consciousness. It's so different from ours. You know what I mean, it'd be on a whole different level. So
and who's to say what kind of technology they would have? And how yeah. that would play into our type of, you know.
Yeah, because if there is an AGI that ever gets developed, it would replicate and, It would no longer be humans doing the replication of the AGI to get higher and higher versions of itself. If it's already surpassed the human level, it would be replicating itself and making itself better. Therefore, it would be like another race.
It would be turning us into itself too. That's the whole transhuman idea too. Like have the AI have it upgrade us so that we can be like it. So we would take whatever qualities it would take on and all the mysteries that would have, it would give that to us, so we would become it.
Well, except for the people who become the non-chippers.
Yes.
Non-chipping scum. The people who wouldn't take the chip and say no thank you, they would become it would be, if that was the case, and this was a movie, so this is how they're trying to instill this fantasy into your head that it could be a real thing. And even if it could be a real thing, there would be like a separation. There would now be humans that have technology, humans that resist or reject technology.
Yeah, yeah. Again, the AI guys talk about this too, the Hugo de Garcia. This is his big thing that he likes to talk about, the Ardelect War, where there's this big war in humanity over, like, should we build them, shouldn't we? And there will be two camps. One will say viciously that we shouldn't. One will say that we have to. So there will be a war over that. And also, the Ardelect started these artificial intellects, just massive AIs.
I'll tell you something. Way before any of this stuff comes to reality, okay, we would have interstellar trouble, okay? And if that happens, all this stuff becomes fantasy number two.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's another topic, too, for transhumanists going out into the universe, yeah. And they look forward to that, and that's part of the idea as
well. Yeah, they sort of wrap that up with the whole, I mean, the sort of technology to duplicate human, I'm still not convinced that's possible. But hey, maybe. What do I know? Maybe they could do it. I don't know. I can't wrap my head around it. So you take that. Now, again, I'm not talking about the below black stuff, the stuff that they don't really, the DARPA doesn't call Aaron up and say, hey, Aaron, guess what we just did last week? We managed to hook up a holographic computer and line it up with human thought, and we can manipulate it. And it's, they don't call you up and do that. So, and they certainly don't call me up and tell me what they're doing in the black world of technology. So what we can project, we have to sort of rely on what we know of today, our iPads and our computers and our, you know, what's going on in MIT and current things like that. Yeah. And project that. We can project that forward maybe a decade.
Yeah, and we also
have it becomes foggy.
Yeah, we do have to look at the propaganda they're throwing out there too and try to decode that and see where they're trying to lead the collective consciousness.
In TV and movies and, you know, yay, rah, rah. Everybody wants to be a universal soldier.
I would also say that you listen to transhumanists and other people who are really in the know, and you got to figure out who actually knows things and who's just like talking, yapping because they like to hear themselves talk. And you have to listen to them very closely because they'll throw little tidbits out at you to kind of let you know like what's happening. They'll hint at things. So it takes an astute person to actually listen for one thing, because nobody's actually really listening to the right people. Everybody's just like,
okay. So have you picked up any of those little tidbits? Have you?
Yeah.
And here sewn and them together? What did you hear? What do you think?
Well, it's all just little things here and there, and it leads you in a certain direction. It gives you an overall picture. I'm trying to think of I've done interviews with transhumanists and just their attitudes about things, and I would say the attitude that they have and the attitude that they displayed towards me while interviewing them is just like, hey, look, you know, like, you're not doing anything, like, we got this thing in the bag basically, and like just the level of confidence that they exude. And then you couple that with the truly disturbing things that they're saying.
What did they say to you? In other words, they don't feel threatened by you asking them these questions.
No. They don't feel threatened. But at the same time, they also try to disarm me by saying, oh, there's nothing you can do, so just don't. Quit it. You're not doing anything.
Go sit down in the corner again.
Yeah. Bye. You're just some little guy. Like, you don't do anything. Like, who are you?
Yeah.
It's not going to do anything. You can't change the world. Like, okay, well, you can tell me that, but I honestly don't believe that. So... I feel like I am doing something.
So what sort of things are they telling you? What are you picking out of their...
That's the thing. It's not like they're saying, hey, I have an underground lab where I have an AGI living. They don't say anything like that. Like I said, it's just little stuff. It's little stuff you even pick up in their research papers. Just like little bits of their philosophy, too. I was talking about this earlier today. And there's this one paper called All Together Now where George Dvorsky, a transhumanist, wrote it. He was writing how it's our moral obligation to give these technologies to animals as well as humans so that animals become enhanced as well. And in that paper, he actually goes out of his way to mention Native Americans and how they were conquered by Europeans. And the way that he describes it, he says that was a wonderful thing because the Europeans were bringing them civilization, and they were actually bringing them up to a higher level of civilization. They were doing them a favor.
Oh, okay. So wiping out 6 million Indians was sort of just the price that had to be paid for their civilization's evolution. Okay.
Yeah. You'll just see little things like that. Like they just pepper their work with this stuff, and you just little. You get a little piece here, you get a little piece there, and the things that they say, like it's so bizarre. I often wonder, like they're really putting this down in writing in black and white. They're actually saying these things publicly. It's unbelievable the things that they call for, because it's just so off the wall and it's repulsive in a lot of ways.
How are these folks, by making those kind of statements, how do they know what the future holds? I mean, hey, the guy says...
They're trying to manufacture it, really.
But wait a minute.
Exactly.
On Saturday, we're supposed to, crisis coming.
That's right. Apparently, crisis.
May 21st.
Let's not forget that one, okay?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Not tomorrow. Well,
he'll be here tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So and if that doesn't work out, then we have the Mayan thing on December 21st.
Before that, even sometime in September, something's happening. The world's going to end or something in September 7th. Or
there you go. So you
so either Christ is showing up tomorrow, or
All this end of the world stuff is accumulating in the back of everybody's mind. It's in the collective consciousness, and now people rightfully don't give it the time of day and they brush it off. I do too, because it's ridiculous. But we're progressively going to see more and more serious problems in the world. I believe to the degree that people will start clinging to these sort of ideologies where they say, hey, look, the end of the world is really now. Oh, we're going through it. What are we going to do? And again, this is all part of breaking people down again. I feel that we're being bombarded with all this Armageddon nonsense to put our minds, get us in that frame of mind so that we actually live out Armageddon, so that we play it like actors on a stage, because there's that William Shakespeare quote, the world is but a stage and we're all actors, or something like that. What was it? The world is a stage and we're all but actors.
Yeah. According to Michael Talbot in the Holographic Universe, the world is just a stage.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, when you're acting, what you're doing is you're reading somebody, you're playing out a script that somebody wrote for you to play. You're not living any sort of unique purpose. You're just reading somebody else's material and you're acting it out, and you're doing it according to their script. And a script, again, is a computer term. That's scripts are what computers run to work. And there's actually an AI system that's called ACT-R. That's like the acronym for this thing. It's ACT-R. And it just kind of like made me laugh because it kind of plays this whole thing linguistically. Oh, it's an actor, and it's just playing out the scripts that's running. And you know what I mean? Like, how does that tie into how we're kind of all actors and all this?
Words and symbolism are also a big thing when it comes to these sorts of things, and them spelling out stuff in symbols that are sort of winks and nudges and nods, and you know, for those who can read the symbols and the signs and see the hidden meaning in the language, it's a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know, sort of thing. Sounds like a big game to me, but it seems to keep them entertained. How is that all, you know, I'm talking about secret societies down through history. There's always been these guys in the background with this elitist club of that you had to, that people, it was a good thing to join so that you could know more than other people and feel better about yourself than everybody else. They're sort of mixed up in that sort of stuff, aren't they?
Yeah, sure. And again, it's about the little acronyms they use. I saw something recently. It had something to do with cryptology and like ciphers, and it was actually on the NSA website. They had some institute or whatever of cryptology, and they had a very telling acronym. I feel like it was like ICU or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, so basically, like, the acronym was a cipher itself, and, you know, if anybody who wants to know about ciphers would be able to decode this one, and so it's like they kind of put it out there, like, ICU, and like, oh, yeah, I do, I see you. Like, I don't even know if that's the correct acronym to be honest. Like, it was something like that.
It was like an in-your-face,
yeah,
you know, way out in the open sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, so they're definitely looking for the people who can do that and who will work with them to further the great work.
Yeah. Oh, well, there's also, all kinds of areas we could go, really. I mean, the seed banks all over the world, there's these seed banks, heritage seeds. There's one in the big well-known one is, I think, an island off of Norway or that Bill Gates actually put money into. Mm. But this is just sort of a weird sort of thing that what are they saving it for? I mean, I could see that it's a valid and smart thing to do. Yeah, I mean, everybody should have seeds. Heritage seeds, not the genetically modified. Here's the people that are the biggest boys in the block who are pushing the GMO seeds being the best thing in the world. But when they buy their own seeds for themselves, they're buying heritage seeds. What's that all about?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Did you lie to me? Maybe.
Yeah, I know Prince Charles is well known for his his obsession with this and the organic gardens and all that, and I know he's like super into that, and he has his own farms or wherever that his food comes from and all this. So yeah, there's definitely something to that.
But then again, he'll come out and talk on how genetically modified food is a good thing.
Yeah. Well, they definitely.
But it's a good thing for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Not for me. Right.
Yeah, because they have to remain wild. They have to because our genetics, our DNA, in fact, is even affected by our environment, and so things like our diet can even affect us at that level and get us to change. And that's why even the eugenic thing doesn't happen in a vacuum the way that the eugenicists want it to. Like, oh, we're going to become superior. Like, well, you got to take into account the environment too. You know, you're not going to become superior by if you're ignoring that and you're just.
Yeah,
like,
well, Bruce Lipton did a whole book on that.
Yeah.
Talking about how environment affects.
But genetics. Don't you think that all these guys right now, whatever ideas they have, I mean, we have to be able to survive as a species, and we have enough problems, you know, in the future when it comes to food supply, oil, possibly, water, which is going to be the next most major problem that we're going to encounter, right? How are we going to overcome those kind of issues to worry about the fact that, hey, we're going to have technology, that we're going to be able to do all this kind of stuff. We're not even going to be able to survive. You know, if water becomes a problem, right, most countries right now that will have the biggest problem would be the people that have the oil, because they haven't got no water. They have to suck it out of the sea. And when it becomes in short supply, or it gets contaminated, you know, and you know, we have any more accidents with nuclear plants,
or
we're gonna have
underwater drilling wells, yeah.
So that's gonna change the world again.
Yeah. So again, that's part of the unpredictable factor. Yeah.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think a lot of this stuff is thinking too far ahead.
Yeah.
Or not looking at reality, what's existing right now.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and I feel like it's kind of purposely that way to get us thinking fantastically too. Yeah, definitely. We have to remember that. We have to stay firmly grounded in what's real and what isn't.
I tend to think that there's a lot of folks out there, you know, and people that may have ideas and say, you know what, this is a possibility, and this is how I like it to be, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's nice and dandy, and that's how religion takes a lot of things as well. But problem is, reality can throw you a monkey wrench at any time.
Yes, it can.
Right? And can change all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's almost like saying, yes, that's all well and good, but how does that affect me today?
Yeah.
You know, I have to, this the bubble that surrounds me is today and tomorrow and maybe next week, but I'll worry about next week when that gets here.
Look,
as well.
If they have you know, in the future, and if we're able to have robots that can do all the kind of things that we do, right, and do the virtual reality stuff, you know, we can go into those worlds and so on. Hey. We'll sit at home and do nothing.
You know? Yeah, well, yeah, that's part.
Just get fat and, you know.
That'd be the sustainable green thing to do. That'd be a way to lower your carbon footprint. You just stay at home all day, sitting in virtual reality. There you go.
They make movies about that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Plenty of virtual reality.
And in the virtual reality movies about that, they'll take two paths. It'll be you have to fight to get out of it. And if it's a bad thing, or it becomes utopia.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't remember one of those films I was watching with.
The Surrogates, right? I mean,
what the movie was, but anyway, they have this guy in this virtual reality thing, and then when they, you know, they get him out of the virtual reality thing, he's like 800 pounds and can't move. You know?
Yeah.
Whereas in his virtual environment, you know, he's a skinny, good-looking guy, you know, doing this thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. I know that movie Wall-E actually pointed that out.
Wall-E pointed that out. Right, yeah. Right, right. Wow.
So you know,
at that point, you won't have to buy pills to enlarge your penis. You can just do it virtually.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, and you can become become a different species.
You can become a woman. A man can become a woman. A woman can become. I mean, they're doing that in WoW now and EverQuest, and guys are playing girls, and girls are playing guys, and that's sort of a virtual lead into.
Yes, the erosion of natural gender, even. Yeah, and this fits in the transhuman thing too, because again, it's an old post genderism deal, and that's part of their spiel. Actually, is post genderism.
That's a lot. One of their selling points.
Yeah, that's one of their ideals, is to actually go beyond gender and, yeah, go into virtual reality and just be some weird either amalgamation of...
You could be a bird.
Yeah, you could be a bird.
Half lion, half bird, yeah.
Have you seen the Ray Kurzweil Ramona bit? Have you seen that?
No, tell me about it.
It, of course, centers around virtual reality, and Ray Kurzweil is telling us what virtual reality can do to... let us be who we want to be and bring out all these personalities that are dormant within us. And it's him doing a performance on stage. And this Ramona character, he's playing this Ramona character, which is the way he's doing it. He's got these like motion capture stuff on him. So it's actually him on stage dancing, but behind him, there's a giant screen with this female CGI character that's animated by his motion capture stuff, and he's singing, but his voice is going through this thing that distorts his voice, so it sounds like a woman's voice. So he is this Ramona character, so he's a female, and he becomes this female Ramona, and it's definitely playing to the whole male-female androgynous themes, and again, it ties into alchemy, but again, it's just, it has to do with virtual worlds, and you can be whoever you want to be, but again, it's definitely alchemical, and it's so bizarre. He gives this explanation at first as to like why he did. He's like, he gives this like half-hearted explanation saying, I always wanted to be a female rock star, so I came up with this idea that virtual reality can make me do it. And I'm just sitting there like, yeah, sure, you
yeah,
came
all right,
up with
buddy.
That yeah. was your idea, Ray. You look like you're thrilled to do it. You know what I mean? It's basically he's up there humiliating himself. But
right.
there's a reason, because he's paying the price for who he is and who he's becoming. He's becoming this prophet in the public eye, and it's all part.
Ray Kurzweil is a big proponent of the transhumanist.
Yes.
Now, does he say outright that that's what he's doing, or?
He doesn't use the term transhumanism. He just advocates all the same stuff that the transhumanists advocate. So
their new word is just singularity now.
Yeah, singularity is his term. He's the singularity guy, and he's basically, you know, he basically owns the singularity term, like, you know, that's his now. So if you notice, there are tons of news stories, carbon copy news stories, because they're all the same thing. Tons of different outlets all talking about Ray Kurzweil's singularity. You see him everywhere now.
Yeah,
because that's how it works. They just carbon copy these things everywhere to put these ideas out in the mass consciousness. So we got to take that into account. We got to see like all these duplicate news stories and understand that this is an agenda being pushed, because they're being it's in all the major news outlets.
Mm. Okay, well, oh wow, we've used up quite a bit of time here. We're going to have you back, because this is really interesting, and I'm sure there's some stuff we could cover. We really didn't even get very deep into the whole alchemical aspect of it. We touched on it, but I mean, I'm sure we could go a lot deeper, and we could even get into some of the new movies that are coming out in 2011 and 2012, the ones that are on out there they're announcing now, and they are sort of following they're following the same trend.
Yeah.
And a lot of these things are coming out. I mean, there's movies in the past like Sleep Dealer and Soldier and all of these things that are basically saying you could be more than human. But we're going to have to definitely have you back on and cover that some more. But I think what you can do now is you can give out your website and tell them what they can order off your website as far as, and what they can see on your website.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the website is theageoftransitions.com. That's T-H-E, ageoftransitions.com. And for one thing, you can watch the Age of Transitions documentary. It's posted there. You can watch a lot of other videos I made, other videos I recommend you watching to understand the subject. And you can get my book, Revolve. I actually have the first chapter as a PDF for free download that you can get. You can read it, see what you think. And if you want to read more, you can buy the paperback version directly from theageoftransitions.com. If you buy the paperback, you get a free DVD copy of the Age of Transitions film, special edition DVD. It's got extras and all that. So that comes with the paperback. And there's also an ebook for sale, and there's a link to the ebook on there that's for sale on Amazon Kindle store. So yeah, I hope you check out theageoftransitions.com, and let me know what you think. You can find me there.
Okay, we're gonna have links to all of that information on our past guests under your name. And people want to go there, and then we'll link it back over to your site, and they can just go check it all. What I'll probably do as well is I'll embed the Age of Transitions in your bio as well, and they can listen to it there.
Cool.
And
well, thank you.
It's no problem. It's no problem. Well, thanks for being on the show, and we'll catch you guys next week. Good night, Tom.
Good night. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, Aaron. Bye-bye.
Bye.